Hello there, and welcome to Here's Your Health with Dr. Burns. I am Dr. Burns, and with me I have my guest, Don Olson. Hey, Don, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So now you are like the master herbalist. It looks like that you have been busy. You've been creating, and not only herbs, but like you know, you've been teaching at schools, you've been creating like groups, you've been doing all sorts of stuff. So I want to know at first, what got you started into herbs and doing this and actually going out and teaching others?
Well, it began a long time ago. I'm an elder now, and so it began in the late 60s. I was attracted to vegetarianism and into meditation, and I started working at a restaurant where we lived and cooked, and we served herb teas there. And they also had a little bookstore, and in there they had a book called Back to Eden by Jethro Kloss. And it's hard for people to believe nowadays, but back then there were not a lot of books on herbalism like there are today. There were some classics, but there wasn't the plethora of books there are now. So between the herbs that we served to drink, which again was fairly new to the culture, most people were just drinking regular tea or coffee, and herbs were, you know, not that known. And so I began, and then I just have the nature that I'm a voracious learner myself, so I sought out teachers, and there were a few around, and late great Dr. John Christopher from Provo, Utah, Wizard of Oz, fabulous man, was traveling around the country teaching people. So he was one of the first teachers that I met. And then I hooked up with a local native teacher back then who was doing herb walks and beginning to teach people. So those were kind of the two that initiated me and got me started.
Hey, that's neat. And then... after from there, you just kind of took off into learning more, seeing clients, and then after that, you got more into like the teaching and stuff, or how did that come about?
Well, in 1976, I opened an herb store called Self Heal Herbs that's still running today, and I ran it, my wife and I ran it for 18 years, and in there, I did everything from seeing clients to making all the medicines to making the blends, and started to also teach at the same time. In 1986, I started a fairly intensive program. I was teaching some evening classes, just beginner herbology, and the students were having so much fun. They said, we want more. And so I created what was back then called the Healing Journey. And it was a 12-week intensive Monday to Friday. And that's where I started teaching more full-time. And so after a while, I sold the store so I could focus on my teaching.
Okay. And then I also see, too, that you've written a book or two.
I have two books. One is Pathways to Healing, and the other one is on Herbal Home Remedies. The first one is my major book, and I've, you know, wrote that in 2000.
Okay. And so what, I guess, got you into, like, from teaching to writing?
That's a really good question. I know Time Life Book of the Month Club contacted me, and they chose my book back then, and she said, you know, what, you know, how did you think about all this stuff that you're writing about? And I said, well, I teach it. So it was kind of a natural follow-up to the teaching. I just started to put my words down on paper, and now it's worked out really good because now I have a textbook, and so that's worked out really good for me over the last, you know, 10 years or so, that when I teach, a fair amount of my material is in my book, so that worked out really well.
Okay. Now, I'm also seeing, too, that you have been teaching a lot of future naturopathic doctors as well, besides herbalists.
Yes, I have. Yes, yeah. One naturopathic doctor just lives up the street from my oldest daughter here in Victoria, and that's how he got into naturopathic medicine. He came to some herb classes I was teaching, and it made him excited about natural healing, and he decided to go into naturopathic medicine.
Nice. Now, were you teaching over the Canadian school, or I saw that you were teaching like over at Bastyr and a few others?
Yeah, mostly naturopathically I taught down at Bastyr. Another herbalist friend of mine was the head of the herbal department down there for a period of time, and he brought me down to – we were teaching medical doctors actually at that point, which was really interesting. When I came down, I had a group of pre-med doctors, and I did some herb walks with them and some plant attunements, and that was very rewarding.
Well, that's good. So now you just basically teach herbalists, or are you still like a guest lecturer for naturopaths and other doctors?
Primarily teach for the public now. I teach through some colleges, but I haven't approached the naturopathic colleges to teach. It's an idea. I've been very involved on transitioning my work online. And for anybody that has done that, it is a fairly challenging endeavor. And I'm also doing a master's degree in environmental education and communication at the same time. So that's keeping me pretty busy the last couple of years.
Okay. So what got you involved in environmental?
Well, it was kind of a natural. I've always taught, and you're a naturopath, so you totally understand this. It's like we are very much our health is relative to our environment, both internally and externally. So it was just a natural consequence. I mean, I'm from Sweden originally. Now, take that, I'm third generation Canadian, but my family roots go back there. And there's a program over there called the Natural Step, and it came about from oncologists who were seeing cancer in children. And he felt that this was not right, so he got together with a bunch of other doctors, and they started this program called The Natural Step, and the premises of it that nothing belongs in the environment that doesn't belong there. So anything that is toxic should not be in the environment. It just should not be allowed into the environment because it causes cancer, and so cancer is a downstream disease. There's no question about it. So it kind of is sort of redundant to on one level to give people herbs and put them on a great diet, and you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, that is vital. I mean, that should just be normal, but for some people that's a big revelation that they should be, you know, look after their diet and take herbs. But at the same time, it's really our responsibility to clean up our environment for our children and our grandchildren and ourselves. But to me, they're just, it's a marriage. You can't separate the two. I mean, it's impossible.
So, yeah, that's true. I mean, I took one semester of environmental medicine. By the end of it, you don't want to breathe. You don't want to drink anything. You don't want to eat anything. You know?
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know. I know. It's a challenge in spirit.
Yes.
Can you learn all this and keep your spirit up?
Yes, definitely. Yes, like, you know, I want to eat to live, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, awareness is a good thing, but a hard thing. So,
yes, and it's like, what do we take in and what are we supposed to filter out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the beautiful thing is there are some really great remedial. It's kind of just like the body, the human body. I mean, you as a naturopath, you know that a part of your job is to, you know, to remediate, to remove things and to, you know, restore things. I mean, that's what we do. Well, it's kind of the same with the earth. There's a beautiful TED talk on six ways that mushrooms can heal the earth. And one of my students, he went on to get a contract here at a mining site that was just devastated, and it was just barren and infertile completely. And through reintroducing mycelium into this environment, it turned it into an oasis within 2 years, like completely of restored it. So that's kind of my interest environmentally, is the whole restoration and remedial idea. Like I'm hopeful that, you know, industry and corporations will listen and stop the pollution, but I'm cautiously optimistic. But at the same time, I also, in my program, there are young people that are working on remediation in cities. I also have friends who took the most rundown areas in the city and turned them into gardens. So that's my environmental interest, kind of like treating the earth like a human body, and which it is. I mean, it is a living being in my estimation. And so, nature's also incredibly forgivable, and if you just leave her alone, there's a beautiful book by David Suzuki called Good News for a Change, and they're finding that if we just stop polluting nature, she has amazing restorative powers and will restore herself.
And yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like I've seen it. I mean, it's for me, it's I grew up, I guess, in and around St. Louis, and of course Monsanto is out there, and I see all this like corn and wheat, and all it says is property of Monsanto, and everything there's been genetically hybrid, and I was just like, I go out there, and I mean, it's like, so they've got like specialists that come in and test the soils, and they say like the soils are depleted and stuff, and so they're always are trying to put stuff back in. But then it's like some of them are also trying to like rotate too, like a lot of the farmers are like where they plant, so then that way the earth can restore, like what's been taken away, and while they do something else. So, basically they're trying to rotate the land that they've got in order for that restoration to take place. And when the restoration does take place, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, it's like the trees are actually coming back. You see this like green ivy everywhere. I mean, it's just like, it's a very beautiful, thing to see.
Yes. I mean, that is the beauty. And there is a lot of devotion to that. And I applaud it. I applaud everyone that is making those efforts. Like I said, it's for the seven generations unborn. It's for our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. I mean, it behooves us to do our part.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the plants, and when you're making these tinctures for people, are you like sensing like the energy of the person compared to the energy of the plants to know like what tincture to put together that's going to work for that person?
Well, the way I did it in practice is that, we compiled about 200 tinctures in my clinic. And then when I would see clients, then I would do like you do, a full, intake, and ask them all the right questions and do whatever personal diagnosis I used, methods, whether it's pulse, tongue. And then as, by the end of the consultation, I would then create a blend for them based on my analysis of who they are and what they're presenting and what their, I do practice Ayurveda. So based on their Ayurvedic constitution, there's, herbs that support in the long term will not imbalance a person. So that was one of the goals, was to do no harm. So especially if, I found that one rule that I learned early in my practice was kind of 1 month for every year you've had something. It's just a very general rule, but since most diseases are chronic, and I would coach my clients that they were probably going to need to, continue on a program of some kind for a period of time to bring back that restoration that we were looking for.
Okay. Now, one thing that I love about herbs is that there isn't just like one compound in them that ends up working, that there's like multiple compounds in each herb that actually help be able to, like restore a person to optimal health.
Totally. And we don't have if you go on to James Duke's site, I can't remember exactly what that is, and you look, he's got all the constituents of the herbs, and there's hundreds in each herb, like hundreds and hundreds of constituents. And so, like they've argued till they're blue in the face about what's the active constituent of St. John's wort. Well, I grow my own St. John's wort. I harvest it wildly. And, when you have really good St. John's wort, it's got this beautiful dark rich blood red color to it. And one of my students, she was a native woman, and she was depressed when she was about 14, 15, and they had her on antidepressants, and that just wasn't working. And somebody recommended St. John's Wort, and I met her, you know, 10 years later, and she said it just totally changed her life. So when it works, it works. But then again, with that quality, I also took a group of students out to a herb farm where we went and gathered the plants ourselves so that we could make our medicines like I was talking about. And the people that had that herb farm also made tinctures, and some of the students bought some of their tinctures because they wanted to try them right away. And the St. John's Wort they sold was incredible. And this person who had been trying St. John's Wort for depression and getting no results, like within one day she felt an immediate change in her, how she felt. So, and this is one of the challenges with herbs, is that quality is important. And we don't live in a totally ethical culture. And so, It's good to know your sources of who's making your medicines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I know that like in the medical community they have this thing, this caution with taking serotonin with like any other like antidepressant or anti-anxiety medicines because of the serotonin uptake, and so some of them think that there's going to be a clash and that there's going to be, you know, like overproduction of serotonin.
Yeah, I agree. I think it just makes sense, is that you're kind of trying to do the same thing with two different, you know, products, and so definitely you need to kind of, that's where a naturopath I think comes in really, you know, important, or an herbalist. I mean, I've done it with people. I mean, people want to go a natural route. It's just an ingrained thing, and so I've done that with people. But I think it's definitely, I put it on, you know, caution to all my students. Caution right now on the air is like, you can't just start. I mean, but people do it. People just add everything, but then I think you can run into trouble. It's also really important to let your doctor know. Like St. John's Wort also has the ability to cause pharmaceutical medicines to bypass the absorption pathway and be eliminated through the liver, so that a drug you may be taking for something that you need could be, you know, not as effective as it would be without the St. John's Wort. So it's really important that people who are using herbs, you know, be aware that they used to say that herbs don't work. I mean, that was a big thing when I started 40 years ago. Herbs don't work. But now they realize they do work. They have strong physiological properties, and they do work. So it behooves people, got stuck on that word. So it makes people, you know, be aware that mixing the two, you would be best under the care of a naturopath or an herbalist, especially if you have, you know, I think there's still a place for lay people to use herbs and to use them, you know, intelligently. But if you're really sick and you're really trying to get better, then I think getting some professional help is important.
Yeah. Now, I know that it's like for me, whenever I end up seeing patients and they're saying that the herbs don't work, and a lot of times it's because they're not taking it the way that they should. And, you know, I mean, it's like, depending on per person, you know, amounts are going to vary even with like the same plant, you know, if it's going to work or not, depending upon what's going on with that person. Have you noticed that with the herbs that you use?
Oh, definitely.
The amounts that you use vary per person.
Very, very much so. Lots of people come in and, you know, tell you they have this horrendous thing, and then they want to have a half ounce of the herb. And if you go to a Chinese medical practitioner, they'll give you like about a pound of herb and say, take this home and boil it all up and drink it. Totally different story, you know. Like,
yes, and the stuff smells so bad.
Yes, wicked, I know. But people get results.
Yeah, they do.
You know, it's like echinacea. I mean, echinacea has been around forever. It was the most popular herb 100 years ago, and now it's still really popular. But you have to take enough of it often enough. It's like, if you don't, it won't work. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, yes, it may, but sometimes it's a matter of just the, first of all, how soon you start the herbs, and then how frequently you take them. And like you said, say, for Ayurveda, the three constitutions are very different in their needs. You know, the air people are very thin, fast metabolism, so they don't need the horse medicine. They need the butterfly or the hummingbird medicine. They need small amounts frequently because they're processing things like crazy. I will make an offer to your audience that if they contact me at herbalhealingpathway.com, I'm going to put out a free constitutional thing there for people to do their own constitution if they want to know if they're an air person, a fire person, or a water person. Because again, this is like you're saying, again, a fire person has a fairly regular metabolism, so they're the ones that, you know, 1 teaspoon 3 times a day would kind of work for, because that's the way their system generally works. They're hungry at 8 a.m., they're hungry at noon, they're hungry at dinner time. And the water people have a slow metabolism. They're the ones that really need the Chinese medicine. They need a really strong, because they have a very slow metabolism, and so they need a stronger dosage less frequently because they process things differently.
Okay. So, yeah, definitely. And the other thing, too, that's surprising about echinacea is that there's actually some compounds in there that are actually good for, like, minor pain relief.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've ever come across The Matrix by Pissinger out of Vienna, but there's one of the primordial sort of substances in the body is hyaluronic acid. And I remember learning a long time ago that's one of the things that echinacea does, is it prevents the production of hyaluronidase, which is an enzyme that breaks down the matrix, which is kind of what surrounds the tissues and the cells in the body. So it's quite fascinating that echinacea, as a folk remedy, learned from the native people, the aboriginal people, you know, turns out to be extraordinarily scientific in its application.
Yeah. One of the first big mistakes that I made, now I wasn't going to naturopathic school at the time, but I was working with a company where they would take a look at like what the environmental impact would be like for highways and stuff like that. And so we were out looking around, and I was with someone, and we're supposed to be looking for like plants that were supposedly like endangered or something like that from like certain roadways, you know, so then that way they couldn't basically go through that way for the highway. And I ended up stopping on echinacea, and because someone was telling me that it's not, you know, I mean, it doesn't grow in the wild anymore. It's actually nature crafted. So, you know, like here I am in undergrad, and you know, went through my plant biology, and I just went, oh look, I'm like, I think this one is, you know, it isn't, you know, doesn't grow wild, and I go, it's echinacea. And so then they ended up, you know, calling back over to, you know, like the headquarters, and they're just like, no, that grows wild everywhere out here. Well, you know, in St. Louis, it does, I guess, grow wild everywhere out there. So they said, well, you know, good try. And I was like, oh man, you know, here I thought I was like, you know, like the most brilliant person on earth.
Yeah, yeah. There's a neat organization that I'd make a plug for. It's just called United Plant Savers, and it's they have a website, and it's great. They're, you know, they give you the, just that there would have been a good place to go and check, and they give you an update on, you know, what plants are in danger for whatever reasons. And so I think it's really important for buyers to be aware of that, so that, you know, they support companies that are also protecting our plants, because just like everything else, they need protection.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, and yeah, because I know it's like a lot of times, you know, like they're over, you know, like overgrown, overcrafted, you know, I mean, it's just, or thrown away because people don't know like what it is, like dandelion. For the longest time, you know, it's like we have dandelion in our backyard, and my dad's just like, oh, this is a weed, you know, and he starts pulling on it. Until my mom started getting into herbs, you know, quite a few years ago. And she's just like, no, this is good to take liver spots off of the back of people's hands. And so I just thought that was, you know, really interesting with that.
There's a really neat thing that I love about dandelions is that most people don't know. Dr. James Duke brought this out in his teachings, is that the dandelion flowers actually contain more lecithin than soya. And lecithin, I find, as a natural healer, is not something that's, you know, that readily available in plant sources. And here you have dandelion flowers that are very, you know, very abundant in lecithin, which is a great, you know, restorative for the nerve as well as for their arterial system. So, and dandelion flowers are actually quite tasty if you don't eat the stem. And, you know, if you just eat the literally the petals, they're sweet, but I think a bit of the bitter is good. So if you eat the steeple and the petals, so I tend to in the spring at least eat 6 flowers a day. I go for a walk with my wife and I usually harvest 6 flowers and chew them up and eat them.
Okay. Now, the dandelion, I notice that I mainly do like in tincture form for most everyone. And we actually add in like burdock and milk thistle to kind of help out with the liver and with detoxification. And I've noticed that if I detox people too fast, that they ended up getting like crabby and irritated.
And totally.
So, yeah. So it's like I'm putting them on grapefruit juice just to kind of bring the anger down because, you know, phase one is too fast and phase two isn't, you know, keeping up with it. So.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I know. I've had that same experience. And and, you know, according to traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, this is the liver season now, liver, gallbladder. And so, yeah, so people will tend, you know, as the sun starts, we're in different environments. I'm in the Pacific Northwest. So here when the sun starts to get hotter and warmer again and it's been cold and damp all winter, then there tends to be sometimes irritability in people and liver signs start showing up. So that's a good point. I like dandelion because it is one of the more nourishing of the liver herbs. So it's not like as strong as, say, golden seal or Oregon grape, etc. I also love milk thistle. I think it's a fantastic herb.
Yeah,
save your life.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like we have, you know, our seasons here in Phoenix, it's like we're in triple digits right now, so things don't grow very well, I guess, like out here during that time.
Right.
But we do get some milk thistle that'll grow, you know, like just, I don't know, let's see, about like February or March when the weather's like just right for it. And I love like the greenish that it has, and then it's like this white veiny,
it's a pretty plant.
Like. It is. And it's just, you know, it's like the way that it just looks and how, I mean, it is. But it's kind of like prickly a little bit on the sides and underneath. But yeah, it is. It's a very pretty plant. And I mean, it's just interesting like how big the leaves actually get on a plant like that.
Have you ever eaten the leaves?
I did once. Probably.
They're delicious.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I had to kind of roll them in a little bit so that way I wouldn't get the prickly side.
Oh, I just take a scissor and cut off because they're not – the big leaves are not bad because they don't have too many spines on them. So I just take scissors and cut off the spines. Just try it again. It will have to be next year, I guess, but they're just so – it's just a delicious green. They're part of the artichoke family. I mean, that's what thistles are. So the greens of the milk thistle – you know, artichoke greens are horrible. Well, not horrible. They're beautiful, but they're bitter. But the milk thistle greens are actually very, very tasty. We have a local community garden here. I don't grow the milk thistle in my garden because it's very aggressive and spreads rapidly, but we have a local community garden here where they grow milk thistle, so I'll go down there and pinch some milk thistle leaves.
So nice. So, and one of the other ones is talk a little bit about propolis. Like, what is propolis made from? What is it used for?
I'm so glad you asked me. I love propolis. I teach my students that based on the knowledge that I have now, having studied natural medicines for 40 years, if I was told that I was going to this planet and I could only take one medicine with me, what would it be? And that medicine would be propolis. Propolis is a resin gum that the bees make, and they, depending on the environment in which they live in, they choose different plants. So here in the Pacific Northwest, they choose primarily poplar trees. So most of our propolis is made mostly from from the poplar tree. They'll have a variety of alders and other trees in there, but their primary source are the buds of the poplar tree. Now, down in Australia, it's very fascinating. They'll use the tea tree plant for making their propolis. And so the bees obviously choose, you know, very medicinal plants because that's what they use the propolis for. They use it for disinfecting their hive. They spray it to every little cone where the queen bee lays her eggs. They coat each one with propolis to prevent the spread of disease. If they kill something in their hive, they'll mummify it with propolis. So it's amazing. And they took it, I think it's in Denmark, they took it into the hospitals to test it, and they found it, you know, extraordinarily effective in like something like 50,000 cases or something, like very extensive research on it. So, but I will put a caution out there is that, again, know your products. Propolis should be a beautiful kind of golden color with a nice smell to it. If it's all black and thick, there are companies that make propolis from the hives that have been burnt, and so they take the propolis after it's been burnt, and it's just not the same thing. So, you know, in your world, there's a company called Herb Farm. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
PHARM. Ed Smith's a delightful human being and an amazing alchemist and tincture maker, and his products are excellent. He doesn't have them in Canada anymore because we had some strange government regulations up here, but for your listeners in the States, I highly recommend his products as valid, you know, what you're looking for.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've actually, you know, I heard Ed Smith talk once, and yes, he's very knowledgeable on a lot of the plants and
high integrity.
Yeah, that's true. He was very particular about where he gets his kava and stuff like that.
Totally. Yeah, I've known him personally and indirectly for like almost 40 years, so 30 years, something like that. But I haven't had a lot of contact with him, but I have met his wife and I've met him. And they have an incredible farm in Oregon, and they're just really good people, really high integrity. And so that's important when you're making you're using your medicines. You want to know where they come from.
Yeah, that's true. So now another one that we have is springtime is here and allergy season is upon us. And the first thing I think of is nettles, stinging nettles.
Totally, yeah.
So, and how much would someone need to take of that compared to like Claritin or Allegra or some of the other like over-the-counter antihistamines?
Well, you know, the research that they've done on it and my personal experience with it is that you really are best using a product that is freeze-dried nettles, because that's where they did that. And to be honest, since I've sold my store, I'm not in the product market as much anymore. So I think it was there was a place out of Washington called Eclectic Medicine or something like that that we used to get freeze-dried nettles from. But that's what I would recommend your listeners to use, is a freeze-dried nettle product, and you would probably have to put on your website where you could get that from, because I don't know at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can do that. But yeah,
and
I mean,
it would have it on.
Go ahead.
It would have it on the bottle how much to use.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, I actually have some stinging nettle growing in my front yard. Someone planted it there, not knowing, I don't think, what it was or medicinal use of it. So I thought that was just kind of funny. I've got it growing in my front yard right now.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I have it growing in my backyard, and we eat it all the time. And yeah, again, you could try, you know, when I was a practitioner, I tried to stick with remedies that were the ones that they had done the research and that they worked. And so I was always cautious about, you know, trying things out on people that I wasn't 100% sure of. I guess you must be aware of the nettle root for men, you know, that it stops the binding of testosterone in older men. This is used very extensively now in Europe for benign prostate problems.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that. I just knew about like the leaves and the flowers and using it for the antihistamine.
Look that up, the nettle root. It's amazing. It's like one of the number one selling herbs in Europe.
Wow. Well, that's neat. So it's like
do
that instead of like deer velvet, deer antler velvet or something like that. Yeah, awesome. Really. Okay. So it's like one of the other ones that I love, it's like out here in Arizona, we actually get seasonal depression because it is so hot outside that people stay inside and close their drapes.
That's fascinating.
No.
I never would have dreamed of that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, so our seasonal depression is different than your seasonal depression.
No kidding.
Over here. So it's like a couple of the things that I like to use for people during the summer are like ginseng and licorice, because I noticed that it really like helps them out and helps them keep their energy going, like especially whenever they close all the windows and doors because it's just so hot outside.
Right.
And so
I think I saw on your website that, exhaustion was, one of the major things that you see clients with, and it was probably the number one thing when I was a practicing herbalist. I'm not practicing now because I'm of retirement age, but I'm still teaching. Was exhaustion. It was the number one thing that people came into me, and I used ginseng very extensively in my practice. Didn't use licorice as much. I'm not sure why. Herbalists are weird. They just get their favorite remedies, and I've used licorice for people for sure, and especially in blends and stuff. But primarily, I would definitely use the ginseng, and I still. Like many herbalists, I'm a really great believer as a therapeutic daily kind of thing. Siberian ginseng is, something that you can use, sort of more consistently. And so I personally use Siberian ginseng still. I had a couple this morning. I just find it's a really, really good thing, really good adaptogen for just keeping the stress levels in their proper places, don't go too far one way or the other, just adapt.
And now out here, because it does get hot, a lot of times we can't use a lot of the warming ginseng, so
exactly,
we use a lot of like Eleutherococcus.
Siberian, the Eleutherococcus,
The Siberian, in order to help out, because it's like the pure ginsengs are like way too hot.
it had people arguing with each other.
Yes, exactly. I think that's why we have road rage. Because it's just everyone's just using too much hot herbs.
It's true. I love Ayurveda in how simple it is in terms of, it's literally if you're overheated, take a cold shower, But you're absolutely right. If people are, taking herbs that are heating them up and it's really hot in the environment, then they're really contraindicated.
Yeah, definitely. And that's another reason why I like the licorice is because, it's like you can still use it and it won't heat people up. And there's just so many good like compounds with it that, it does like so many different things at one time, just like the Siberian ginseng does.
That's so yummy.
Yeah, that's true. So, it took me a little while to actually get to get used to the flavor of like real licorice instead of the sugary stuff.
Real licorice has a slightly bitter flavor to it. It's primarily sweet with a secondary bitter, which are both cooling in Ayurvedic medicine. So it's a perfect, like you said, tonic. Have you ever used the borage?
I've used borage a little bit, not much, so for that. But yeah, I know it's like borage is actually really good for the adrenal glands as well and for exhaustion.
Yeah, I had a student who was an ex rock and roller, and he was totally burnt out when he came to do my course. And he just, I teach people about a bunch of different herbs, but he just really latched onto the borage, and he started using it extensively, and he said it just totally changed his life. You know, he did it for a long time. He did it for, you know, 6 months and then continued. But he said it just, you know, made such a huge difference to his health.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah. So. But again, I believe in kind of like a more of a shamanic approach of a native aboriginal approach of sort of what they call allies. And so it sounds like licorice is somewhat of an ally for you, like you really resonate with that plant. So he really resonated with the borage plant and with borage medicine. So I think that also helps. I always encourage my students to, you know, build relationship. These are living beings, these plants. They're we cohabitate with them, you know. Without them we'd have no air to breathe, we'd have no carbon sinking, we'd, you know, have no biosphere, so get to know them.
Yep, definitely. So, and the one thing that, you know, like with this exhaustion and stuff is sleep apnea. Have you ever found, like, herbs to work on sleep apnea?
No. How about you?
Okay. No, I haven't.
No. No. There's a few. I've tried a few. You know, they have things here that, you know, things for breathing in and stuff. But my short answer is no, I have not. No, that's...
Okay.
I noticed on your website it was very interesting that male menopause, andropause, is linked to insomnia. Now, I don't know if it has any link to sleep apnea or not, but I just was going, oh, that's very interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, they've noticed that it also, like with andropause, that it causes depression in men.
Yeah.
So that's probably why a lot of them end up getting the what they call the midlife crisis.
Right. Kind of spark things up a bit, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, no, you don't need to spark things up that much. All you got to do is just come in and get your hormone levels tested.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Which it's very interesting that we're living in our culture, we're living a lot longer. And so, yeah, it's kind of interesting for, you know, I'm definitely past that stage now, because I'm in my mid-60s. But it's just very interesting this is going to be a very interesting time for my generation, the baby boomers, because I'm sort of the first of the boomers to go through into this, you know, this time of life, and it's going to be a very interesting time in terms of health and lifestyle and how such a large demographic is going to respond.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's like I already know that there's a lot. I mean, it's like one of the, I guess, best-selling over-the-counter hormones is DHEA. You know, because it's said to, you know, help bring testosterone levels up. So
right.
A lot of people go into the vitamin stores trying to get it, you know, not knowing if they actually need it or not. And some of them are actually coming out like very irritated when they take it because it's not the right dose. It probably isn't the pure form of the hormone in order for them to take it. And so, and it's like, I know you're trying to do this yourself. However, you know, you really need to get tested for us to really find out what exactly it is that you need.
Totally. Yeah, I agree with you. I noticed that, again, on your website that one of the guys uses the saliva test, which was, I thought was brilliant because that's much more immediate than here where you have to go get a blood test and then wait for the results and stuff.
Yeah, it usually takes about a week or so for those results to come back in.
Or even for the saliva?
No, I'm talking about for the blood.
Yeah, but saliva was fairly instant, wasn't it?
It depends. It usually takes like a couple of days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then I can get the test results in. So yeah, they are almost immediate. Depends on where the company is on what the turnaround time is for them. But yeah, definitely. So, and, you know, like with that, there's also, you know, of course, you know, like a lot of women who also go through menopause as well, but men also produce estrogens as well. And
totally.
So sometimes, like, men also get hot flashes and they don't know that they're getting them.
Yeah.
So,
you know what's fine? You know what's really ironic?
What?
Do you know what one of the most estrogenic plants is?
Which one?
Hops.
Really?
So your manly beer is actually really high in estrogen.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that ironic?
That is. And so many people are consuming it in liquid form.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's sad because, like you said, the balance in the male between the estrogen and testosterone is not. They're actually very close. That's why it's so vitally important to make sure that your testosterone is bioavailable. It's because it only takes a little bit to tip you into the danger zone, because estrogen is for growth promotion, right? So we don't want our prostates growing, you know.
Yes, that.
I had a friend who, you know, was vegetarian, pretty healthy living, and you know, very sort of, you know, kind of unconventional, didn't like to go to doctors and stuff, and he almost died because his prostate gland, you know, blocked his urethra, and, you know, and he got into the hospital just in time. So yeah, it behooves people to...
To get checked out, go see your doctor. Don't try and do it yourselves.
Yeah, well, if you get to see a naturopathic doctor, even better.
Yeah, definitely. So that's for sure. So, well, it looks like that time is almost up here. I had so much fun talking with you today. Is there anything that you want to leave us with?
Well, you know, if people want to check out my website, HerbalHealingPathway.com. I guess you can put it on your website. Like, yeah. I said, they can get a free link to a constitutional thing if they want to figure out what constitution they are from an Ayurvedic perspective. And that gives them at least a heads up on what are the right medicines and right herbs to use, and some lifestyle suggestions that they can start looking into. So, you know, that's mostly what I would encourage people to. And then if they want to, you know, if they want to learn, and they, you know, they don't want to be a naturopathic doctor, or they don't even want to be a necessarily professional herbalist, but they really want to learn more for themselves, then my online course definitely gives people that opportunity to learn from home. And that's part of the reasons that I've created, especially like single moms or working people, they just don't have enough time to take off to go to a traditional school. This way they can do it in their, you know, in their spare time and still get the help of somebody that has extensive knowledge like myself.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you so much, Don, for joining us today. And
my pleasure. It was a joy to talk with you. I felt our common love of the plants. I could feel that coming through the internet. Both have that passion for those healing plants.
Yes, definitely. And hopefully we can get that passion out to everybody else.
Definitely. So, well, thanks for doing this.
Well, sure, not a problem. And thank you, everyone, for joining us and listening in. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.